Translation, you are the original personal founder of all the demigods and the orders of different gradations, yet you are the oldest and unchanged. O Lord, you have no source or superior. You have impregnated the external energy with the semen of the total living entities, yet you are unborn. Report. The Lord, the original person, is the father of all living entities, beginning from Brahma, the personality from whom all other living entities in different gradations of species are generated. Yet the Supreme Father has no other father. Every one of the living entities of all grades up to Brahma, the original creator of the universe, is begotten by a father. But he, the Lord, has no father when he descends on the material plane. Out of his causeless mercy, he accepts one of his great devotees as his father to keep pace with the rules of the material world. But since he is the Lord, he is always independent in choosing who will become his father. For example, the Lord came out of a pillar in his incarnation as Nrsimhadev. And by the Lord's causeless mercy, Ahalya came out of a stone by the touch of the lotus feet of his incarnation as Lord Sri Rama. He is also the companion of every living entity as the Supersoul, but he is unchanged. The living entity changes his body in the material world, but even when the Lord is in the material world, he is unchanged. Thus, that is his prerogative. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 14.3, the Lord impregnates the external or material energy, and thus the total living entities later come out in different gradations, beginning from Brahma, the first demigod, down to the insignificant ant. All gradations of living entities are manifested by Brahma and the external energy, but the Lord is the original father of everyone. The relationship of every living being with the Supreme Lord is certainly one of son and father and not one of equality. Sometimes, in love, the son is more than the father, but the relationship of father and the relationship of the father and son is one of superior and the subordinate. Every living entity, however great he may be, even up to demigods like Brahma and Indra, is eternally subordinate servitor of the Supreme Father. The Mahatattva principle is the generating source of all the modes of material nature, and living entities take birth in the material world in bodies supplied by the mother material nature in terms of their previous work. The body is a gift of material nature, but the soul is originally part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. So these are verses uttered by the demigods, or the devatas, after they've been manifested. In the third canto, even in the second canto, there's descriptions of how the Lord creates the material world. And this is also one of the subject matters of a Mahapurana or Great Purana, including the Bhagavatam. That is, we have topics like Sarga and Visarga and Stana and Uti, etc. So there's 10 topics of a traditional Purana. So the Bhagavatam also discusses all of these different topics, in spite of the fact that Bhagavatam is special. That is, its whole goal is to indicate that everybody should just worship Krishna and forget everything else. But still, it goes through the whole process of discussing everything. Like Bhagavad Gita says, surrender to Krishna, forget everything. But then Krishna goes through Karma Yoga, Gyan Yoga, Stanga Yoga, and Bhakti Yoga. But, of course, he says, forget it all and just worship Krishna. So similarly, Bhagavatam has many topics as well. So it goes through these 10 topics, and of course it goes through Karma Yoga, Gyan Yoga, Stanga Yoga, and Bhakti Yoga also. But the ultimate goal is ultimately to say you should just worship Krishna. Even rejecting the Vishnu forms, just worship Krishna. This third canto largely involves this first topic called Sarga, which is the primary creation, or the glance of Mahavishnu creating, or not creating, but manifesting Mahatattva by injecting the jivas, as is stated here. The semen of the total living entities is injected into Prakriti. This means that the Lord injects all of the jivas, infinite number of jivas, into Prakriti, and it becomes Mahatattva, which turns into Ahankara, which turns into material, other material elements and senses and sense objects, etc. This creates worlds, And then Brahma enters and starts his creation, his secondary creation, Visarga. So that's the basic outline here. The whole description is being given of how the Lord glances and the Lord creates the material elements. Another way of discussing this, of course, is the universal form, which is actually described about six times in the second and third cantos, I think. So it's the discussion of this huge Purusha, and then he has the different senses, etc., like his eye, etc., eye, ear, nose, etc., and then related to the eye is the planet, the sun, or the deity of the sun, also the deity of the sun, Devata, and the sense object also, and each sense has a Devata attached to it and a sense object attached to it, and you get a whole body with all these things all over it, and that's the big Purusha, the universal form, and still it can do nothing. And then the Lord enters, and suddenly the Purusha can see and hear and whatever. So material energy is there, but behind that is Supreme Lord. So that's another way of discussing the creation. But in the process of doing that, then we have these Devatas appearing, who, of course, are personalities, and they're also jivas with material bodies. But they're also material elements, if we look at the creation itself. So simultaneously, they're just like, we can say, forms. And then particular jivas take up that role of becoming a devata for that particular eye or whatever, particular sense. So anyway, these devatas all begin to offer prayers to the Supreme Lord after they're created. In other words, devatas who control the senses and control planets are not independent of Supreme Lord. So they're offering respect. So Prabhupada mentions in the purport that the relationship one is one of the superior and the inferior, or the independent and the dependent. So the Lord is independent, the devatas are dependent. The Lord is independent, jivas are dependent. So that's the ontological position of the Supreme Lord. So this is, of course, the, as I said, the topic of Bhagavatam is Sarga. So that's made very obvious by the fact that nothing happens in the material world until Mahavishnu, who's a form of the Supreme Lord, who is the independent, impregnates jivas into matter, and then it starts to produce what we call material world. If he doesn't decide to do that, nothing happens. So Supreme Lord is independent. So that's how what Sarga actually means. The Supreme Lord is the independent. And then everything after that, Visarga, is Brahma's creation. So Brahma obviously arises from Vishnu also, Garbhadaksha Vishnu. He was an expansion of Mahavishnu. And then he does the Visarga. He creates the bodies, individual bodies and planets for the living entities within a particular universe. And then the other topics are what happens within the universe. That is, the Lord provides some guidance for the living entities. For instance, he empowers Manus to rule over the human beings and give them Dharma. He provides holy name, as we see in the case of Ajamil, and gives some protection to the living entities, even if they're sinful or ignorant or whatever. Still, they get the opportunity to get protection of the Lord. And all these different topics are there. And then finally, destruction is the final thing, described in the 11th and 12th cantos. And then the 10th topic is actually the subject matter is Asraya, which means the shelter or cause of everything. We're back to Supreme Lord again. He's the cause of Visarga, Sarga, all this in the material world. And then, of course, that Asraya is more than simply Mahavishnu. Greater than Mahavishnu is Krishna in the spiritual world. So that's the asraya, the final asraya of everything in the spiritual world and in the material world. So that's the ultimate goal. So Bhagavatam takes the 10 subject matters and discusses them as a duty more or less, but indicates that finally that asraya is not just the Vishnu form who's, you know, stimulating material energy and putting the jivas in, but beyond that, the, we could say, the cause of all causes is Krishna, who is the final manifestation of God in the spiritual world. And then Mahavishnu is a secondary aspect of him. So actually all these sarga-visarga, these are all like trivial things. And the important thing is Krishna in the spiritual world, which is the 10th canto of Bhagavatam. So anyway, the devatas here offer prayers to the Supreme Lord to indicate you are superior to us. Of course, the devatas also, though they are devotees, their realization is also somewhat limited. We see that Brahma gets limited and can't understand who Krishna is. Indra is bewildered about the powers of Krishna, and he tries to overpower Krishna with his reign, etc. So the devatas appreciate Supreme Lord in his capacity as being their superior. But usually that's the powerful aspect of the Lord as Vishnu. So this is a common realization of the Supreme Lord as indicated here. You are the first one, Adya. You are the Purana, the ancient one, before everybody else. You are the cause of all causes. There's nobody superior to you. Everything comes from you. So this is a very general knowledge of God and realization of God, not incorrect, it's very correct, and also very necessary. So we do have to establish the position of the Lord as the supreme person, as opposed to, you know, someone above him. So that, of course, is indicated here by this prayer of the devatas, you are the first person, etc. So this, of course, is essential for all devotees. Thus we have, like, we discussed the 10 aparads in the morning, and we should not consider the names of the demigods like Shiva and Brahma to equal in the name of Lord Vishnu. So they are not independent, they are not superior, they're not even equal. The names, which will speak of the person himself. So we put the Lord in a superior position as a necessary fact, as the basis of our whole theology and philosophy. And we can't change that. That's an unchangeable thing. The Lord is supreme. What we call him Vishnu or Krishna is supreme, and everybody else is secondary to that. And that's the only way we can establish this relationship of bhakti. If the jivas are equal or superior to the Lord, then that the bhakti that, as we know it, with prema does not exist. You cannot have it. So first we have had a definition of the Supreme Lord as the supreme entity, the supreme independent. And this will be emphasized over and over in the Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, and Srila Prabhupada's purports, etc. So we have to accept the existence of that supreme entity. Additionally, of course, is the fact that this entity is not without a form, not impersonal, but is a person. So he is the Purusha. So some people can accept the supreme, but they don't want to accept the form and qualities. So in philosophy, this is Vedic philosophy, this is Brahman, impersonal Brahman. So many people will accept that. Sages will accept Brahman, impersonal aspect, beyond material nature, but no form, no qualities, no activities. That is most worshipable. That's the cause of everything. But Bhagavatam, takes this only as a secondary aspect of the Supreme Person, Param Purusha. So yes, it is spiritual. Brahman is spiritual, but it is one aspect of a Supreme Person, not just some supreme entity, a Supreme Person. So that's the Purusha. So, of course, Purusha means a person. In fact, a male person, a man. So he is the supreme person, as we have persons in the material world. So we have supreme person. Difference is that he is the first. There's no one beyond him. He has no cause. He is Adya. He is the oldest, Purana. no source. Of course, Purana means old, but Krishna is eternally young, so it doesn't mean Purana in the old in the technical sense or the usual sense of the word. That means you cannot trace out his beginning at all. He is anadi, and he never ages. So we do have to have a definition of that supreme entity who is a supreme person, supreme Lord, in order to establish the process of bhakti. We can, if we want to want something supreme, we can establish jnana or astanga yoga, but not bhakti. If we want to establish supreme bhakti, then we have to have supreme Lord, the person. So the devatas also accept that. Yes, you are supreme person, and you are, you have activities because you inject the jivas into prakriti and cause the whole material creation. So you're the creator of the material world, etc. So this is also distinct from the idea that this is a supreme spiritual entity, but he doesn't have any activity. So this is Shankar's philosophy. Brahman does nothing, and thus there is no creation. He doesn't glance over anything because he has no eyes. He doesn't create anything because there is no material world. It's all illusion. So you can't really create an illusion even because it's useless. So he creates nothing. The Brahman is no activity at all. But here we see the Lord impregnates material energy with the jivas and causes material creation. So he does activity. So this is establishing the personal God who has form, qualities, activities in relation to everything else, and he is supreme, he is eternal, he is perfect. Of course, this is not doesn't discuss everything about Supreme Lord, but some of the major factors to at least start the process of bhakti yoga over other processes. So for that reason, we'll find repeatedly in these different prayers of devatas and sages and devotees that they will always talk about this Supreme Lord who is without cause, who is the beginning, the cause of all causes, etc. Because it's necessary for the process of bhakti. Of course, even that is in one sense secondary. Once we establish the position of the Supreme Lord above everyone. As I said, the whole process of purpose of Bhagavatam is to accept Krishna as supreme form. So not only we have to accept God with a form, which is also probably unique as part of the Vaishnava theology. It's not in Mayavad theology. It's not in Sankhya, it's not in all the other processes, the yoga, etc. They don't accept that supreme person with a form, qualities, activities as the supreme spiritual entity. Nobody accepts it. And other religions also don't accept. So it's actually a unique concept in the whole material world, being a Vaishnava, to accept a spiritual form of God with form, qualities, activities in the spiritual world. It's very unique. Nobody else has that conception of that God. And Vaikuntha or Goloka or anything, it doesn't exist, cannot exist. So it's very unique. But of course, that's all the Sattvic Puranas are discussing this, so it's no problem. And if we go back to the Brahma Sutras, even with Atato Brahma Jigasa, we have, now you talk about Brahman, and what is Brahman? Jamajasya Yataha. Everything comes from Supreme, that Supreme Brahman. He has activity. If he has activity, he must have do it somehow. He has a form, qualities, etc. So this is, of course, supported by Brahma Sutras. Brahma Sutras is an explanation of Upanishads. So therefore, the Shruti itself, the Upanishads, are also confirming the fact that supreme entity is person with activities, form, qualities, etc. Right? He manifests material world. So anyway, that's one level to accept that. But as I said, Bhagavatam is going further than that. So we have this unique aspect of, okay, God has a form or whatever, which nobody else does in the material world, actually. Nobody will accept that except us or Vaishnavas. Four Vaishnava Sampradayas will accept, ultimately. Though, of course, if you look in India, it's, everybody has a form. We have Shiva and Ganesh and Durga and Shiva. Everybody has a form, yeah. But of course, many are devatas. And many people, even if they worship Rama or Vishnu, etc., they don't accept those as ultimately spiritual forms. They're also illusory. Ultimately, they turn into, it's all Maya. And then once we do our sadhana, we reject all these forms. So even if they do have forms, it's also temporary forms. It's not eternal spiritual forms. So that's something unique to the Vaishnavas. So, of course, Bhagavatam establishes that here with such verses. But it says, higher purpose is to show not that God has a form, but second, God has many forms. And he's one. Because one can, he's Adya here, he's the first one, he's the original. That means there's one person. But then we also say he has many forms. So therefore, Bhagavatam will describe Matsya, Kurma, Varaha, Nrsimha, all these avatars. Describe the up to Canto 10. Huh? So God is one with many forms. So that's also unique. Nobody else has that conception in the material world. First, God has a form. That's difficult to accept for everybody. Second, God is not one form, many forms. That's more difficult to accept. More difficult to say that God can be a pig or a goat or a horse or a snake or whatever. He has all sorts of forms which are not even human. So there's another strange thing that people can't accept in the material world. But that's in Bhagavatam. He has all sorts of forms. But then the unique feature of Bhagavatam is to say that all these forms are there, but Krishna is the supreme form. Which immediately gives rise to the problem. If God is one and there's no two, why can you have one superior God and one lesser God? It doesn't make sense. So when we say God, Krishna is supreme, or he's the cause of all causes, etc., we in no way are saying that there are different gods or different Bhagavans. It's all one Bhagavan. But Bhagavan can manifest himself in different forms. And in those different forms, he does different activities and he displays different amounts of qualities. That's all. Examples given by Rupa Goswami of the moon. So the moon is, there's only one moon. We only have one moon. But today's Ekadasi. Yeah. If you look at the moon tomorrow, it's a little bit different. Look at it 3 days, it's a little bit different. So the moon gets bigger and bigger and bigger, gets smaller and smaller and smaller. That's one moon. So how do we explain it? The moon manifests different amounts of light on different days. But it's one moon. So similarly, God manifests different amounts of qualities in these different forms of Matsya and Kurma and Varaha and Nrsimha and Rama and Krishna. Still, yes, the moon is one and we have these different amounts of light. We also have Purnima, all the light. So I think we say, okay, the Purnima shows supreme amount of light as comparison to the other phases of the moon. So similarly, we say Krishna is the form of God that manifests maximum amount of qualities in relation to all the other forms that manifest less qualities. That's all. So in that way, we're not saying that there one is inferior, superior, whatever. They're all one God, but manifesting and different amounts of qualities. So Krishna manifests most qualities, maximum qualities. Yeah? Of course, in Nectar Devotion, Rupa Goswami discusses 64 qualities of God. And Jiva's 60, or 50, sorry. And we have Vishnu gets 60. And Krishna has 64. So four extra qualities. But even if we take, okay, Vishnu has, Krishna's only four qualities extra. Vishnu has 60 qualities. So in a sense, they're mostly the same. 60 out of 64. But even there, whatever qualities, the 60 qualities that Vishnu manifests, Krishna also manifests, but he manifests in a more spectacular manner. So, therefore, the qualities of Krishna are definitely superior. Not only the four extra, which are sweet qualities, but the other qualities also, they manifest spectacular qualities. So that's the ultimate purpose of Bhagavatam, to show how Krishna is the ultimate manifester of all wonderful qualities. And, of course, the wonderful qualities ultimately mean what is superior in Krishna is the sweetness or the Madhurya. So therefore, four extra qualities are all Madhurya. Madhurya Rupa, Madhurya Leela, Madhurya Bhaktas, and Madhurya Venu. all sweet things. So four qualities of Krishna, all sweetness manifested in Krishna. And sweetness does not mean Madhurya Rasa, technically, here. It means simply the ability of these aspects of Krishna to invoke intimate relationship without respect. So we don't see Krishna as God. We just see him as he is with a intimate aspect. So these are the four particular qualities of Krishna that distinguish him from all the other forms of God, who also manifest qualities, but there's always that respect and greatness involved. As I said here, we have to see supreme. He is supreme. He is source of everything, etc. So there's an emphasis upon this aspect of God, that the God is the supreme entity. With Krishna, that begins to disappear with the inhabitants of spiritual world in Vrindavan. They see Krishna as small boy only, but he's a simultaneous supreme lord. So in this way, the both things are necessary, and of course 10th canto dedicates itself to discussing the sweet aspect of Krishna, and the other cantos, they discuss the more philosophical aspects of establishing the Lord as the supreme entity, etc., like as we see here with the devatas' prayers. Okay. Any question?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you for the class. Maharaj, in this verse, we're hearing that the Lord is impregnating material nature. So what is Lord Shiva's role?
In relation to Vishnu or in relation to material nature?
In relation to Vishnu, material nature, mm-hmm. and bringing about the living entities. Mm-hmm. And then we also speak about Lord Brahma being the creator.
Yeah.
So what's his role in terms of living entities?
And of course, even people will say Durga is the creator. All the Shaktas and all the people that worship Durga, and they will say she is the creator. And it's all true in one sense. This is a matter of relative position of everybody. Just like the father is the creator of the son also, and like this. And so we have different levels of creation, and the devatas definitely do something. So in that sense, they're creators. Brahma is the creator. He does something, manifests living entities or whatever. But if we trace everything back to the beginning, how does Prakriti manifest? Then it doesn't manifest unless Mahavishnu says, okay, I'm going to manifest this material realm, and he impregnates the jivas into Prakriti. Then it manifests. So he is the ultimate creator. And everyone like Shiva and Durga are all secondary to that. They have their role after that and in cooperation with him. Shiva, of course, is in most cases not a devata like the others. He's not a jiva. He's actually considered to be a form of the Supreme Lord. He is like Vishnu, but we don't call him Vishnu because he has a significant number of less qualities, that is, five less qualities, so therefore we put him in a separate category. So he has a role in creation, and then, but his primary role is destruction. He's in control. He's a guna avatar also. He's in charge of destruction and tamagun. So when the material world ends and he dances ferociously and destroys the whole material realm, etc., like that. Ultimately, of course, we can say the final destroyer is the Lord himself. Krishna says, I'm the destroyer. So it doesn't happen unless the Supreme Lord wills the whole material to disappear. Then Shiva plays a role, etc. So Shiva plays a role in creation and destruction, but it's all secondary to the will of Vishnu.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, can you clarify one point regarding the manifestations of the avatars? In Brahma Samhita, there is a description, or in other scriptures are descriptions, that the form of the Lord in the realm of Vaikuntha is of four arms. He has certain lakshanas, wearing kastuba gem, had certain markings on his chest. There's no mentioning that those individual avatars in the Vaikuntha realm have a form of a boar, have a form of Narsingha as a half-man, half-lion, have a form of Kurma, have a form of Matsya and whatnot. Mm. But yet the manifestation, when they enter the material realm, they take certain, and you can say, certain form, certain shape, certain lila to facilitate that lila. So my question is, what is the difference between in the realm of Vaikuntha having arm form, and still consider that this is, I don't know, Matsya Loka, this is Narsimha Loka, this is Varaha Loka, and in their shape of a quote-unquote like a human being with form arms, and then when they descend to the material realm, their shape almost changed to facilitate that particular lila and the nature. So if my understanding is correct, would you mind giving some explanation on this, please?
Yeah. Well, so this is also a conception that the Ramanuja followers have, that the Supreme Form is a Vaikuntha form with four arms, etc., and there's 24 expansions in the spiritual world, and then Lord comes into material world as avatar, then it takes forms like Matsya Kurma and Krishna, etc., like that. But if we look closely at the Rupa Goswami's Lago Bhagavadamrita, then he says all these forms are actually eternal. So Matsya is eternal, Kurma is eternal, Narsimha is eternal, Rama is eternal, obviously. And even in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, there we have Rama in the spiritual world. But if he's just an avatar in the material world, he wouldn't be there. Only Vishnu would be there. But Gopal Kumar goes and he sees Rama also. So we accept all these forms as eternal in the spiritual world. Also, all these avatar forms. Avatar means they simply come in the material world, but they're all eternal and they're in the spiritual world also. And even forms like Narada Muni, they're in the spiritual world. They're also in the material world. They're Shaktivesh avatars, but they in both places. Or the Kumaras also. Spiritual world, material world, they come.
And
What, the Shaktivesh avatars? Well, because they're Shaktivesh avatars, jivas generally, they just serve. Oh, yeah, they have their lokas. Of course, when you talk about planets, we're not talking about little balls of something in the, like Saturn and all like that, which are material things. Their realms are eternal and infinite. So they're, we can just kind of conceive of it as a borderline, but it's not some, 50 miles across or 200 miles across or something like that. So we shouldn't think of it like that.
Thank you for the class, Maharaj. One question is, you mentioned how the Vaikuntha realms, well, you said that actually ultimately we have to surrender to Krishna and give up even the Vishnu manifestations, but there are those, of course, even in different leelas that accept those manifestations. So the question is that for persons who accept those Vishnu expansions, they see that personality as the Supreme.
Yep.
And so from their perspective, are they also seeing Krishna as not the Supreme?
Let's say theologically, we follow Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who says, okay, not only Krishna, Radha Krishna is Supreme. So if you're a cowherd boy, that's inferior or whatever like that. But we don't say that also. And when Lord Chaitanya was in Sri Rangam, then he met the Sri Vaishnava's followers, Ramanuja. They were worshippers of Vishnu, and he would joke with them and say, well, look, Krishna is supreme, you know, why do you worship Krishna? But they've never changed. So he also did not say, okay, you're stupid, or insult them like that. Yeah. And we have the case of Murari Gupta, who was worshipping Rama, because he's actually Hanuman. So Lord Chaitanya said, you must worship Krishna. But then he said, no, I cannot do that. And then Lord Chaitanya is very good. So he accepted also. So if we have accept any particular form of the Lord and worship it, and that satisfies us, then no one can object to that. No one can criticize that. It's perfect for that particular person. Yeah? So if you prefer the cowherd boys over the manjaris of the gopis, fine. Then that's your supreme perfection, is to be like a cowherd boy, fine. Then nobody's going to criticize that in the spiritual world. Yeah? So Mother Yasoda doesn't criticize anybody, and gopis don't criticize the cowherd boys, and you know, nobody criticizes anybody. They accept everybody's position, whatever rasa they have. Yeah? So similar, if you go to different lokas, then everybody's satisfied there, and they don't aspire to go anywhere else. So the people of Vaikuntha don't aspire to go to Goloka because it's superior and we like Krishna more than Vishnu. No, Vishnu is supreme for them, and they don't know anything else. It's beyond them because they're completely dedicated to that form of the Lord.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. One small question about the number of qualities. I've heard this more than once, that Lord Ramachandra has 62 and a half qualities, but never read it. Is that true?
Okay. I have not read that in any of the Goswami's works, so I don't know about that one. Maybe some secondary something, somebody has made a commentary like that, or I haven't seen that, or whatever. Of course, we should accept that Ramachandra is a little different from the other forms because there's a little sweetness there. And if you look in Riyad Bhagavatamrita, when Gopu Kumar goes from Vaikuntha there, then he says, yes, he's a little better than Vishnu, in a sense. There's a little more intimacy there. He's a little sweeter, whatever like that, but he still wasn't satisfied. So, but he doesn't give any exact, you know, half qualities like that.
You said that without accepting the personal aspect that the Lord has a form, activities, qualities, it's impossible to connect in bhakti. That couldn't be.
Yeah.
If there is no supreme Lord, there is no supreme bhakti.
Yeah.
When I distribute books, I meet a lot of Muslims. You know, in the Islamic theology, they don't accept. I mean, they believe in the concept of the supreme personality of Godhead, Allah, the Almighty One.
Okay,
but they don't accept that He has a feature, form. Yeah. Sometimes I ask them, "What is He doing now?" Yeah. I mean, what does He do in the spiritual realm? Yeah. They don't know, but still they. They have a lot of love and pray. Mm. You know, they pray a lot. And also Srila Prabhupada said, okay, you can remain Muslim, but be a good Muslim.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what is the chance for them to connect with this? But if it's not bhakti, what it is that they have? Yeah. Could you explain? Because I see some strong faith, sincerity, and they pray, you know, probably even more than us. Mm-hmm. I see them all the time praying, you know, they put the rug on the floor. And can you give a little...
I would think not only the Muslims, the Christians also, they don't accept the form, but they will accept some qualities of God. That God is the creator, so they accept qualities. So this is a little, maybe a step above Shankar, so which God doesn't create anything because there isn't anything to create because it's all illusion. So at least they accept a real world and there's a creation, etc., and God has some activity. But they don't want to accept the form because the form is limiting. We put, you know, He's this size or that size, so that's kind of limiting. And we have material conception of form for So for that reason, they don't want to accept form. So it's a kind of a little bit above the completely impersonal, like Sankhya or Mayavad philosophy. And thus, you could, on the basis of the qualities and the activities, you could establish some sort of relationship that's a little bit weak, but it's there. But it can never fully manifest, because how could you have a fully loving relationship if there was no form there to serve? It would just like be some mental type of vague thing. So definitely, you don't say it's false. Even Brahman is not false, and realization of Brahman is not false, and Paramatma also is true. And there's various amounts, we can say little amounts of bliss there. But if we want to get that full bliss, then we do have to have a more complete realization of the object. It's like examples given in Bhagavatam is you can have an object like milk. So if we just use one sense, like the eye, then milk is something white, which is true, but it's not complete, because so many things are white. Your shirt is white, the cheddar is white. So milk is white, that's truth, but it's not a complete truth. So the eye will give you half a truth about milk. And then if you take the ear and the nose and the taste and the touch, then you get a more complete idea of what is milk. We could taste it and feel it, liquid, whatever, it's sweet and it's nourishing. So by combining all the senses together, then we get a complete knowledge of milk, or experience of milk. We get a complete experience. So by various methods, we can also approach God, and we get some genuine experience of God. But if it's these different partial methods, then we get a partial realization also, and a partial bliss. If we take all of these senses and we combine it with the mind, and the mind puts everything together, then we get a more complete knowledge and experience of milk. So that we say the bhakti, whether you have form, qualities, activities, everything manifested, then we can have a more complete experience of God, and that's more bliss. So we don't deny, but we can say it's partial. And it's, let's say above the Brahman aspect, you get above the Brahman aspect because they do accept qualities. But it wouldn't be so complete because you don't have a form, and then you can't do service, and so many things are not there. What is the pastimes with a God with no form? What do you do with them? And of course, what is the position of the jiva at that point? Do they have a definition of what you are in the spiritual world in relation to Allah? Is there? So if it's not clearly defined, the more clear we can define it, then the better the relationship could be in the terms of the jiva and Supreme Lord.
So something is better than nothing.
Yeah.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. You mentioned, of course, you all know that Lord is eternal, Nitya. So it means all jivas, you can say, came to being. Also, there is no such a thing to start to exist.
No creation of jivas.
That means all jivas are eternally exist with the Lord. So that means there is no, sometimes there's a term, creation of jiva. Or
yeah, figurative, so not literal.
Sometime one has such a hard life and laments, oh, why did you create me? Yeah. I didn't want to exist and such, but
yeah,
there's no creation. So in that sense, some jivas, that means even in this moment, the pulling from the spiritual realm, and some jivas get liberated. Is that, is probably true? Is that, and then when those jivas who are called Nitya Mukta get liberated, there is no difference between them and Nitya Badas and Nitya Muktas. In one sense, like when you get liberated, like completely go to spiritual world, that
Nitya Muktas never fall.
Yeah.
If we're in the material world, we can get liberated, then we say Bada Muktas, and we also don't fall, because that's a statement of Krishna.
That means, because we are marginal,
We're all marginal.
Yeah.
But even if you're a Nitya-mukta, you're still
by
marginal.
By our own will. Even Nitya-muktas are also marginal.
Yes, yes.
By our own will.
Yes. Well, not our will. It's just we are like that because we're eternally like that. We say ultimately Krishna's will. Jivas only exist by Krishna's will, and they're all tatashta. So we're all marginal, just by our very nature.
That means Nitya-muktas are not some special jiva who are created equal to us.
Well, they're better because they're in the spiritual world ever and they never fall down. So that's that they're better than us who are in the material world.
No, that is comes again, old question. Like,
but that, of course, how is from Krishna's point of view, everybody's equal in sense because they're all tatashta and they're all, he gives mercy to everybody. But from our point of view, if we say everything's equal, then we just stay in the material world happily forever after, and we don't have to go anywhere else. That would be our position. Eh?
Interesting. But we've been also in spiritual world at some point. Then all questions which we have, how we came from that.
Yeah, well, the whole point is that if you're in the spiritual world, there is no time, so there's no question of when anyway.
But there is question how.
The how won't arise if the wind doesn't.
How we...
So no time in the spiritual world. The spiritual world is completely different from here. So we're speaking in terms of cause and effect and when and how and whatever. And the scriptures will explain to us and give us a philosophy to give us some idea about, make it credible for us to get out of the material world. But spiritual world has no time, no space, nothing. It's completely different. So ultimately, we can't logically explain everything in the spiritual world in terms of our material experience.
Oh, that means by probability that we have been there and came here a few times, like, let me take all an account, because there was always chance to fall, so that maybe some of us been there, coming back and going there. Back.
Yeah, of course, then that makes the spiritual world imperfect because Krishna's promise that you go and don't come back would be broken. So that's the other problem.
Thank you. Thank you, Maharaj. I'll get a headache. Better I stop. Okay?
Thank you for a nice class. Just some clarification. The impersonalists, the Brahmavadis, they get to the Brahman. And the yogis, they get that meditate on the Paramatma. Mm. Where do they go when they
Where do the Paramatma people go?
Yeah.
Well, if the yogis do worship Paramatma and they can realize Paramatma, fine. But the problem is because they don't have any devotion, they have no aspiration for service. So if they realize Paramatma, then they want to merge into him or his effulgence. Well, so similar to merging in Brahman. Similar, yeah.
A bit more personal,
even though the personal things. So they it's kind of a misfortune for them, because they do get a realization of the form, but then they reject that and they want to merge into it or into the effulgence of the form.
Lack of service.
Yeah, because they're very much influenced by the other impersonal idea that the impersonal is superior to the personal.
Thank you.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Just a small clarification on, in the last line of the purport, Srila Prabhupada says the body is a gift of the material nature. But we also hear from Srila Prabhupada that the body is our biggest anartha. So how would you just, it's like how we use the body, because if we use it in the devotional service.
Yeah. Well, of course, it's given by material nature, so in that sense it's a gift. Yeah. Now we can use it negatively or positively. So we use it for sense gratification, then that's, of course, what people under ignorance do. They use it to try to enjoy separately from the Lord. If we use the body and the senses and the mind and whatever is in the material world for serving Krishna, then these things no longer act as an obstacle, but rather they're an aid for developing our bhakti and getting out of the material world. So we can use body and the material world in both ways, to bind yourself further into the material world or to get out of the material world.
Thank you.
Maharaj, I don't remember it so well, but maybe you know it really well, is that in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, Sanatana Goswami seems to be explaining that there are jivas who worship the demigods as in pure bhakti as the Supreme Lord, and that they, that the Supreme Lord has Vaikuntha forms that look like the demigods, and that they go there to be with them.
Yeah, there's also forms in the spiritual, other forms as well, that I think you mentioned, there's a 20-hand form and an 8-foot form and a 20-arm form, all sorts of different forms that could be in the spiritual world. So it's unlimited in terms of your aspiration of and what form of the Lord you want to worship. In that sense, unlimited.
Sometimes Prabhupada in his lectures states that, you know, the Vaishnavas are also demigods.
The
Vaishnavas are the demigods. Like,
oh, okay. Suras.
I was looking at a class and you're saying those who are Vaishnavas, they are also demigods, but we don't generally refer to other Vaishnavas as demigods. So then how does that
okay. work? Well, of course, the word demigod, are sometimes the word Sura is used. Sura. That's the word used, so it means demigod, but it also means devotee. And it's a kind of a general term to mean anyone who is not anti-god. So we have the suras and the asuras, the devatas and the demons, or we say the devotees and the demons, or like that. So sometimes the sura is just used for interchangeably for anyone who accepts the Lord. So it could be devatas or who are devotees, or it could be the devotees who are not devatas but on earth also.
So you're saying it's a broad term? You're saying that the word literally is a broad term.
Yeah, broad term. Yeah. Okay, I think that's it. We're over time, I think. Hare Krishna.